You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. In the green room, I'm Andrew Weeby with David Goss and Matt Doyle. It is Tuesday. Yes, that's a little strange, but we had to throw things off for a good reason. Martin Luther King Jr. Day on Monday. So I took a break, got a breather, got some perspective. It's much needed for everybody in this world, it seems, at this point.
You flew cross country.
I did. I came off a red-eye flight. And Pity Martinez, I thought he emerged from his red-eye flight in Atlanta looking spry comparatively. I mean, I'm crawling. I got my hood up. Water.
Pity Martinez didn't look entirely thrilled.
Yeah, but he could function. Signing things and speaking and
you
conversing
know why?
And on camera.
Pity Martinez was landing to get paid.
Cha-ching! We don't yet have the official news, but come on, you don't land in Atlanta and take pictures with fans and do the whole dance. If you're not going to be a DP for Atlanta United, of course, that will be an eight-figure transaction, we assume, when it's all done here. There's a lot of news in MLS. We'll get to that. We've got some interviews on this show. 10 good minutes with Jim Curtin on the transition from playing to coaching. And if you think back to Jim's journey, it was pretty quick. He went straight into the academy, and then he was rising all the way up to the first team. Some great stories there, including an incredible story about Peter Novak and how he thought he might die as a rookie after making a tackle in practice. Luchi Gonzalez, also on this show. He's been making a lot of headlines lately as he hits media day. He talks about monetizing a club, but also winning. And how do you do that? The balance between youth and the first team. Of course, he has unique experience. The academy director for FC Dallas, now the head coach. Tim Goodman's with him as well coming up. And we've got all the transfer rumors, all the news. I'm going to give you a choice here to start it out. Sacramento and expansion. They got a new owner, billionaire Ron Burkle. Has agreed to take over a controlling interest in Sacramento Republic FC, which has everybody saying their MLS opportunity, their MLS window is whoop, right back open.
Are you saying that?
I don't know. I'm assuming it is because that's basically what Commissioner Don Garber has said to them repeatedly.
Have the money
and you've got a great chance. There was never a guarantee because you never do that, but it felt like it was implicit there for a while.
Well, it feels like we're starting with this then.
All right, fun.
Yeah.
Ron Burkle, he owns a bunch of supermarket chains, or did. That's how he made his fortune, and now he's in all sorts of entrepreneurship and venture capitalism and investment. He's got, reportedly,
$2 billion.
And that's an important thing when you want to buy a soccer team and get into Major League Soccer. The mayor of Sacramento, Daryl Steinberg, said this. Today we announced we are now this close to getting Major League Soccer. There's no guarantees out there, but Commissioner Don Garber said in his State of the League that MLS can support more than 28 teams. With Austin in 2021, you're at 27, Miami and Nashville in 2020. Then you got St. Louis, which Taylor Twellman is beating the drum on again, and they've got some momentum, and they figure they're probably
Phoenix is out there with a plan and a really good ownership group. You know that there are other markets. We were supposed to stop expansion for a minute at 20 teams. Then we were supposed to stop at 24. Then we were supposed to stop at 20. I think it just keeps going. And I'm not going to send any congratulations to the people of Sacramento at this point. But if they're not an MLS team by, I don't know, 2022, I'll be shocked. Because they have the ownership now. And they have proof of concept with that team being very relevant in that market. They still get 11, 12,000 people a game. And they have for a few years. They have an academy system that's up and running. I mean, they're putting kids into the U.S. youth national teams. This is not just like they threw a stamp on some crappy club and said this is our academy. They're actually developing players. They have ambition. I think it would be fantastic. It's like Quakes, Sacramento Republic, instant rivalry, drivable. And once you get like two fan bases like that, rubbing shoulders, it elevates things. I hope it happens.
Sacramento is also a city that it's, you know, like the second tier city, and I don't say that with any disrespect at all. I mean, I'm from like an eighth tier city, so I can accept that. Wichita, Kansas isn't even like, we're not sniffing it. But even in Wichita, you see like city flags and like, welcome to Wichita. We're cool again. Like, we like our city instead of hating it as we used to. Sacramento Sorry, that was – you went pretty deep into
this. Yeah, really.
Sacramento is the same right now. My fiance's family is from the area, and I was there over Christmas a couple of times. I saw a ton of Republic gear, by the way, mm-hmm. which is every time I go to a city that has USL, MLS, whatever it is, I'm looking for gear because it's a signal to me that it's, like, cool to wear it out. When I was first in Kansas City, nobody wore Wizards gear for obvious reasons. Now Sporting KC's
now everywhere. Only the hipsters do. Yes, only hipsters exactly. are like, not I got a Jimmy Conrad.
Socially upwardly mobile young people yes. have now glommed onto it. But it's a city that believes in itself and is growing, and there's a lot of people going there because it's just not as expensive as the Bay Area. So it's got an opportunity there. I think it would be really cool. I don't think they'll stop at 28 teams. I don't think there's any reason to stop at 28 teams, if I'm being honest. You know, I don't think the level is going to drop given the level of investment now and the fact that they do have an academy and that teams are starting to figure it out. You got to cover the country somehow, and I think this league can support more than 28.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And as Doyle said, it's a team that we've hoped would be in because the fan base is there. The soccer knowledge seems to be there in the area. The talent's definitely there in the area. Like, we could put 15 clubs in California and everyone could produce good talent. Seattle's doing it for California right now on their own. So there's no negatives there. I like the idea of just having more fan bases around each other to have some more rivalries. Because you talk about San Jose, but then you add in the two LA teams, right? LAFC is a new club. Like, you need rivalries for them as well. You need regional stuff potentially for Phoenix or Vegas or wherever
Cascadia's
we go from there.
Cascadia's not far.
Right.
They've been loaning players down for a long, long time. We'll see what happens with Sacramento, but this is interesting news for sure. And it comes back to also commitment from ownership, but also local government, because it takes a lot to get these things built. And they have a stadium plan in downtown. They have development plans around it. It seems like Brooklyn's going to be the one that takes over a lot of that development around the rail yards. Could be really cool.
One other thing just to add is it's good for soccer in Canada and the U.S. if there's more clubs, strong clubs. So in leaving the door open to MLS expansion, you probably generate more energy in USL clubs from the championship down to Division II, right? Because that's an option of, hey, it's not the only reason you're coming to support your team, but it's a reason to show how good a soccer market your market is, have rivalry with MLS teams, play them in Open Cup, things like that. So I think it's good for the sport in this country, if they're viable markets, to keep the door open at least to say, hey, this is an option because you saw the energy generated in Sacramento the first year or two. And then Preki leaves and the results don't go the same way. I think it was under Paul Buckle. And obviously you're not going to win championships every single year. But then it starts to waver a little because you don't know what's happening and it becomes unsure. And there was the obviously falling out between the ownership group that existed, which makes it hard not knowing what your team's future is. So it's nice to see more strong markets in the soccer community.
For sure. More soccer, always a good thing. Look, we got a lot of stuff we can cover here. I'm just going to hit some quick ones. Carlos Vela to Barca, that's dead, mm-hmm. it seems to
be. Yeah, because Kevin Prince Boateng.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Obviously.
I've always had a soft spot for Barca. I've never understood the ins and outs of their transfer window approach.
Every once in a while, it just feels like they say, we need a player.
Yeah.
And we're going to pick a guy who we know has played professional soccer.
I thought they did that with Arturo Vasquez.
Yeah.
Right? Like that... Arturo Vidal, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a high-level player. I know nothing.
Like, I thought they kind of did that. Like, going from we need a center forward to Carlos Vela to Kevin Prince-Boateng.
Guy's going
to
score 8 goals.
All right.
Media marketing tour.
Because I would probably score.
Media marketing tour was abuzz by this news because then Carlos Vela delayed some of his appearances and they're like, that's why. Like, actually, it wasn't why. Probably just running late or something. Albert Elise, that one's dead as well. The Fenerbahce, all you Fenerbahce supporters in my DMs, please move on.
You think it's really dead? You think it's really dead right now? Or you think this is just a little bit of negotiation?
Yeah, it's a little negotiation. I mean, it's.
They're $2 million apart.
For sure. I mean, you want to get to Kaku, too, on that same sort of tip.
Sure thing.
Those $2 million matter, though, given the split in Major League Soccer. Who takes what money? Where does it go? All the recoupment you have to do on the amount of investment to acquire a player. So in order to get allocation money back, you basically have to use the funds you get on the sale to go reimburse yourself for the purchase. So there's a lot of things going into that. By the way, The Athletic's Paul Tenorio has a good article on some of those ins and outs up on The Athletic today. But I would wait till Miguel Miron was sold if I was them.
Yeah.
Hit CCO. Get yourself a marker. If Almirón was sold this window, that makes it a little bit easier for you. If he sold in the summer, you wait and see. Or at that point, you say, okay, maybe we got to take the $6 million or the $7 million or the $5 million or the $4 million, whatever it might be.
Can I just jump in there?
Sure.
There are a couple of differences between Kaku and Elise, in that the Dynamo own Elise. They don't. There's no like partial ownership from, I think, Monterey. They bought him from, so they bought him outright. So there is a cut, I believe, that goes to MLS HQ.
Yep.
But it's not prohibitive. With Kaku, Red Bulls only own 80% of him. So 20% of whatever they get.
His rights.
Also, the front-end investment in Kaku was much larger.
Much larger.
So that changes it entirely as well. So I guess for now we're on Kaku.
Yeah.
He's liking everything involved Club America on Twitter, which is generally not the best sign.
If you're Red Bull, does it matter to you that it's a club in your region?
So that does make it a little bit interesting, right? Because let's face it, Liga MX clubs are direct competitors with MLS clubs at this point, for not just players, but for eyeballs, for sponsorship money, for market share, for mind, like all of that. I think it does matter. I think if you're going to sell Kaku, you got to try to soak Club America. You got to get all that Linus money. Not all, but you got to get a lot.
But would you sell him for the number that Club America offered to a Bundesliga team or a La Liga team?
I don't think I would. I think it would have to be 10 million because of that 20% that would go to was a Huracan?
Yeah, Kaku was 6, yeah. That was kind of the generally understood figure there. So if you're saying 7 to 8, which is what people are talking about right now with Club America, if I'm Red Bulls, I look at that with my history, with what he was supposed to mean to my club, with my goals, with my aging striker up top, and I say, no, pass. I don't need that. I don't want that. 7-8 million?
Yeah.
If you're not going to give me 10, if you're not going to give me 12, which is what they're saying they came back with, which is how you negotiate, then move it on. And sometimes those hard bargainings, that plays into that next sale. That plays into the next window. That plays into if Germany or whoever it might be or La Liga come calling for Kaku.
And by the way, Kaku is going to be on Paraguay's Copa America team this coming summer, which is a pretty big shop window to be in. So it's totally understandable for the Red Bulls if Club America or whoever comes in doesn't hit their number. They say, nope. But the thing you have to worry about in all of this stuff, and it looks like the Dynamo did a really good job with it, is you got to keep the player happy.
Agreed.
And Kaku, like anytime a team comes in and says, like a big team, like Club America comes in and says, we want this player, it means that player's getting a raise if the transfer goes through. And if the transfer doesn't go through, he's going to come to the Red Bull front office and say, okay, where's my raise? I'm still here. Where's my raise?
Kaku was all smiles, the media marketing, when he sat down with us. Same thing with Albert Elise. But, hey, if I had Kobe Minnick after me, I'd probably be all smiles too. Red Bulls fans are not happy about these rumors. At least a certain part of the fan base is not, because to them, if you sell here, it's kind of a slap in the face. We buy tickets. We want a champion. We don't have MLS Cup. We were billed. The bill of sale was that this guy was going to get us over the top, that he was the missing piece. Should they accept the sale if it gets to 10 million? Or if you're a Rebels fan, would you still say, no, don't do it. I don't want you to do it.
I think it's tough because I think they've proven that when they let guys go, they're as good, if not better, the next year. So I think until that cycle is broken, you have to trust that the club can rebuild it. Whether it's through a signing, an individual signing of the quality of Kaku, doesn't matter. Because if they bring in two guys who fill in their holes just as well, losing Kaku and other players getting better as individuals or using young players in new places, if they continue to do that, you can't, I don't think as a fan, complain until it gets broken.
So I think you can a little bit, because it's not about having two guys who add up to being as good as Kaku. In the playoffs, it's, to me, with the Red Bulls, it's been, they're constantly just one guy short. They're constantly just one guy short in attack. And this past year, it was, okay, you had Kaku, and BWP, frankly, slowed down in the second half of the season.
So maybe did Kaku, showing, by the way.
Yeah, and maybe showing his age a little bit. And once again, they lacked that third guy who could, and we saw it with Atlanta United. Like, when they needed some extra punch, they brought Tito Villalba off the bench. You know, we saw that in 2017 with Toronto FC. They needed that one more guy. They went out and got Victor Vazquez. And I think Red Bulls fans who would be upset or who are upset at this look at their team and say, okay, when are we going to do that?
That's fair, but I don't know if that's Kaku in general. Because if you sell Kaku and you replace him and you fill in for that spot, that one hole is still open. That's a different reason for being mad at your club than selling Kaku, the way I see it. You can say you haven't invested enough in the roster to mm-hmm. get us over the hump, but selling Kaku and replacing him, it seems like part of the frustration is just losing these names and not being able to latch on to a person and not having a jersey that you can buy and a player you can support continuously. That, I think, is a different conversation than saying you're building a championship roster year in and year out and you're doing what
you
have to do.
I think they're related. I think those conversations are very much related. But anyway.
By the way, look, they didn't spend $6 million on players before that. So Kaku was an outlier. It was an indication. It was a marker that that front office put down to say, look, we are going to be ambitious, and this is an ambitious move. It doesn't show a ton of ambition a year later if you just move him and you don't have a ready-made replacement. You've got to have the replacement, in my opinion.
That's the thing. And from what I've seen on Twitter, like the very vocal Red Bulls fans who are worried about this are coming from a place of, yeah, but there's no guarantee that they'll replace him.
Right.
That maybe this means Vincent Bezecourt ends up being our number 10. Bezecourt's a nice player, yeah, but he's not a guy who's going to push you over the top and get you, you know, into MLS Cup. And
getting Kaku was a battle, if you remember.
It was.
And so it's not like, exactly. So it's not like, oh, he's gone now? We have a week and a half left of the transfer window? We'll just go out and get someone else. It's not that simple.
Which, again, is why it makes more sense. Because, look, if you look at it, like, very logically, Club America doesn't spend $10 million on players.
No.
They haven't ever done it. Which also puts Atlanta's spending and the $6 million on Kaku the Red Bulls spent in a different light as well. When you're starting to compete in those transfer fee zones, or even best, someone like Club America, who are one of the biggest clubs in this hemisphere. So, it's interesting right now. There's a lot of talk. Maybe not a lot of payoff, but we'll see if it continues throughout this window. Usually late January into February, if you look back at transactions, are very busy months. FC Cincinnati, of course, have to build an entire team. Alan Cruz, he is now in the building. I hear they still want Mateus Fernandez to get it done.
Is Alan Cruz a defensive midfielder?
Seems like. Is Caleb Stanko also a defensive midfielder? Can we confirm?
He is.
There's now a report from Christian Dyer, if you know Red Bulls fans know him for sure, saying that they are going to sign Caleb Stanko on a TAM deal. Which I'm shocked by for a whole variety of reasons. I understand that it's probably, if this is true and if it gets done, TAM based on transfer fee. But I really wonder how much Freiburg can hold you over it when he's made 13 first team appearances. He's 25 years old. He's got one cap for the U.S. He should not be a TAM player, in my opinion.
I'm shocked.
And they have a full midfield, it seems. That didn't seem like the spot they needed to reinforce.
They have that guy, the Swiss guy, Bertone, who has 150, he's 25 years old, he has 150 appearances in the Swiss Super League, which is a pretty decent league. Like, they invested decent money.
But he's more of an 8 pushing in towards the 10.
They have Victor Ulloa, who is Stanko's age and is a very accomplished MLS 6. They have Fatai Alashe, who's good depth at that spot.
They just got the
Eric Alexander,
who's more of an 8 for sure. Alan Cruz, who's
picked up the number 1 draft pick, a number 8 in the super draft, arguably.
I think he's
central
more of
midfielder.
A
10. Okay.
I think, but like,
either way,
but either way,
I don't know if I agree with that, but that's not the point.
Either
right
way,
now.
They're so deep.
Well, it's smart. You play a 2-6-2.
Right.
You play the center back.
You're doing the Thiago Mata thing. The 2-7-2. Yeah.
But then I want Titon playing as a sweeper keeper filling that middle space.
And it feels like they're probably going to play 2 forwards. Is that?
No, I think
one?
It'll
just,
be a 4-2-3-1.
Okay.
Yeah, because so, I think that's Alan Cutchins.
So then you're talking about a 10, which they're looking like they want a DP player for, and then 2 players. I just don't. And if it's on TAM, I just don't understand the resources, because Caleb Stanko, this isn't an established U.S. national teamer, been a star in Europe, done his thing in whatever the Bundesliga.
He has 6 Bundesliga appearances
in
6 years.
Yeah, it's just it's not many. It's a lot of regionalia.
And like, let's Russell Knaus.
Not to like dump on
Russell.
Or anything,
Russell Knaus came back and was a higher regarded player, younger player, came back on I think about $250,000 or $300,000 a year with DC United, which is good money for a relatively unproven guy. It's not a TAM deal. I don't understand.
Oh, and by the way, Russell Knaus is way younger.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 2-3 years.
Legette was similar. I mean, obviously a little while ago, but Legette was similar.
And
was like,
you're talking about a 25-year-old that has not been – and I know he's had injuries.
I'm happy for the kid.
So much potential.
Go get that paper.
Let's go.
And like, one of the things that we're kind of flying blind here, because we still don't know exactly how much money – expansion teams get.
Yeah.
But it feels like expansion teams get a ton of GAM and TAM to build those rosters. So maybe it was like, look, we're sitting on this. we it's a use it or lose it proposition. We might as well use it on this. And now teams out there, they need eights and they need sixes. Let's wheel and deal.
That's the one thing. If you use the TAM, which you're given by the league, you have to use to bring him in. And then you say, well, now we can move. We paid the transfer fee on our TAM. Now we can move him for assets inside the league. At some point, you'd assume this year they're going to move some of these guys.
But who?
I mean, I guess there could be a suitor out there. But
every team in MLS needs a six or an eight.
Yeah.
If it's not a starter, it's depth. But a lot of them are starters.
But is your return on investment? This is.
I don't know.
Even an,
I don't
it's not
know.
Even official. Well,
I mean, let's do an RSL. You can't start Krylock and Beckerman together. To me, they need a six.
Well, they brought in Everton Luis.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I think most teams want to make that decision on their own. And I'm not sure if I was an MLS GM that I would say, I'm going to go get Caleb Stanko. I know he has talent.
No, but I would say I'll go get Victor Ulloa. I've been saying this for 2 years. Someone should have gotten him from FC Dallas.
But isn't that what Cincinnati then did?
Well, you bring him in as an expansion pick, and then you get rid of him, and now Caleb Stanko and Alan Cruz are your two starters.
I don't know. Again, return on investment, I have questions there. Roland Lamont is done, so there were question marks after the expansion draft. They got a contract set with him. Before we go to break, though, this is maybe my favorite wrinkle recently in the transfer window. Diego Fagundes, once out of New England, he went on Uruguayan radio and he said, with my dad, we're doing everything possible to arrange my exit. He's out of the Lee Wynn playbook right now saying, I want out of here. I'm going to make sure you know it. I think preseason started today for them. Does anybody know if he was in camp?
It started yesterday.
Yesterday?
And I do not know. I admit I haven't scoured social
the photos,
media.
Yeah, that's usually the best way
but
to do it.
Yeah, I haven't really seen anything. I also, from what I've heard, he hasn't done the Lee Wynn thing and sent, like, texted a picture from the golf course. So, like, he's probably, I mean.
He wants out,
and it's understandable. But the revs are the revs, man.
Do you think this is, Brad Friedel's talked a lot about maybe players. He's talked a lot about mentality.
We have something about this in the mailbag.
Do we? That's all right, we'll save it for that then.
But I will say just one.
Bojan to the Revs is also
a. Yeah, that's just one of those that, like, it's a name you know at some point is going to be connected to MLS. And then you get hear the team and you're like, wasn't always what I expected. But you knew it was coming at some point. For Fagundes, as Doyle said, it's understandable. One, because he's been there for a while. Two, he signed some lower deals maybe than his production to stay there as a homegrown.
Christian Roldan had 8 goals, 10 assists last year to sign an $800,000 a year contract. Diego Fagundes had, I think, 9 and 11. He makes $190,000.
And on top of that, he can't play for the U.S., so he has to play for Uruguay. To get in that national team, at some point he has to be seen by someone. Going to a Uruguayan powerhouse and potentially from there going to the Argentine League or going to Portugal or wherever else you end up is a way to get into that national team.
Copa Lib with Nacional would be a possible. Clásicos could be a fun move for him, but you mentioned it. He doesn't have a ton of leverage. If he made more money, he'd have more leverage. So he'd say, I don't want to be here.
Right.
You don't want to have a player on that amount of money saying, you don't want to be here, but he's on such a cap-friendly deal and a productive player that if you're – but then it comes back to the culture. We'll get to that in the mailbag. All right, we got to go to break. Coming up next, Jim Curtin on the other side. The Fire, they signed somebody.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email ExtraTime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at ExtraTime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Ten Minutes with Jim Curtin starts right now. Head coach of the Philadelphia Union. Welcome, Jim. Always a pleasure to see you and be shown up by your attire. You can't see this, but he's full suit.
It's a great
beautiful
suit.
Tie.
Skinny
knit tie, I think.
Yeah.
Skinny tie.
Skinny-ish. Good to be here. Thanks for having me. And, yeah, I think someone played a joke on me because none of the other coaches have suits on now. But I went suit. So.
Yeah, so right now you're leading coach of the year.
That's good. That's good. Best dressed, maybe.
Yeah.
Best
there you
dressed.
Go.
That's good.
Well, you know, not Atlanta's going to win that.
Yeah. I know. He got a lot of credit just for putting a sweatshirt around his neck. I feel like that was
it's
overrated.
It's a bold move. It's been since the 80s since that was big.
No, but what a season.
Let's talk about your transition from player to coach. That's what we're doing today with you. And walk me through that time of your life. You're retiring. You're trying to figure out what's next. What are you doing?
Yeah, I think you have to even take it back further to my rookie season. I was lucky. You know, I got drafted by Chicago Fire team, sitting in the finance class, literally had that moment in your life where you go, do I stick with finance or do I walk out of this classroom right now and go down to – Bob Bradley and a really good Chicago Fire team. I chose that. Stumbled into a locker room of, you guys know the names. I think there's 15 of them that are now coaching or GMs in the league. That environment was incredible. So I always saw the game from a coach's mindset as a 21-year-old to getting fortunate to be thrown into that locker room. So when I finished up, it was no secret that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to stay in the game and continue to coach. You know, sometimes players have the benefit of finishing a career and get thrown right into a job. That's not always the best way, I don't think. But sometimes it happens and guys thrive and do great. Every pathway is different, but mine was more of I want to try to experiment with some things in the academy. You know, I was there for several years, kind of got to try different things, working with literally, you know, under eights all the way up to under 18s, boys and girls, and finding different ways players learn was a real key for me. Eventually worked my way up, was lucky enough to win the Generation Adidas Cup with a really good team. When you look at now that little club, the little team that we had, I think from Zach Steffen to, you know, some of the big time kids that were on that team that are now pros, I think almost 10 of them are pros. So it was a really talented group. You know, and was lucky to then become an assistant coach, did some scouting for the first team, then it became an assistant coach, and then came into the head coaching job. Can fully say I was not prepared and ready, you know, because I don't think anyone really is, and anyone who tells you that they are fully ready for a head coaching job is full of it for the first one, because there's just so much that goes into the detail of things like this, like the media, you know, preparing players, you know, from age, you know, you have 16-year-olds in your locker room and you have 35-year-olds in your locker room, and managing and navigating that. It's a really difficult thing to be prepared for, but I think I've kind of learned each year and trying to grow and get better each and every year.
You were 21. You go into that locker room. Between that time and retirement, how did you prepare? Because it sounds like you had an inkling. You had a feeling. So what did you do, and what did you learn from sort of each stop along the way?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it starts with, you know, there's different things you take. You take your licenses, you go through that process, and yes, you do learn a lot on those courses. But I think you learn the most from, you know, sharing stories and talking with guys you saw as mentors. So for me, that was a Bob Bradley, you know, picking his brain on different things and how he handled different things. And Jesse Marsh is another one who comes to mind as a guy that, you know, you're sharing stories with, you're trying to learn from how they did it, maybe mistakes they made when they were younger coaches, and trying to grow and improve that way. So it's a long, slow process. And again, I still don't have all the answers, and you're trying to constantly grow and adapt. And, you know, you look across our league now at the coaches, and I'm happy and proud of the diversity that's coming into the league and the different styles and way people see the game, because there is no one right way. As you can see now, you see teams adjust year to year with different formations and styles. I think it's only a healthy thing. And as a coach, you constantly have to be learning and able to adapt and grow and change.
Did anyone specifically approach you and say, I think you should go into coaching?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think back. I mean, guys that you know, on Armis, you know, C.J. Brown, Josh Wolf was on that team. You know, you can start to reel off the names: Jesse, Ante Razov, Zach Thornton. It's no coincidence that we're all coaching. And yeah, we all talked about maybe staying in the game. At first, it's you're initially going, oh, crap, what's next? You know, yeah. So every player goes through that. It's a hard thing, man, when your career comes to an end and you don't get that rush of being in the tunnel and hearing the studs hit the ground. Like, that is something that you can't teach to people. You wish you could give that feeling to people, what it feels like to score a goal in a packed stadium. It's a unique feeling. When that's gone, man, it can be a scary thing for guys. And it's a hard thing for a lot of players that finish up. So I think you always have to be thinking of what is next. And, you know, for some that'll be different career paths. For me, I always thought it was going to be coaching, and it was because of I keep going back to the people that were around me in that locker room during the days. Even when I got traded to Chivas, you looked around and it was still Jesse and Ante and all these guys that saw the game as coaches. So, yeah, I'm fortunate, you know, to be in the right place at the right time, just like anything in life a little bit.
Have you ever to any players recently as a head coach or when you were in academy approached any players specifically and been, you know, told them that you think that they should focus
all the
on
time
it?
Yeah, and you know those guys, and you guys know those guys just from watching the game. You can almost tell the way they see the game on the field, who are the guys that are constantly looking around and evaluating things during the course of the 90 minutes, and who are maybe just the guys that are gifted and running around like, you know, crazy and just making plays. So, certain players see the game differently, and certainly I've had those conversations with guys that, hey, man, you probably have five more good years in you. Keep going for sure, and I hope it's even more than that, but you're going to make a great coach someday for sure. You can definitely tell that in players, and I would encourage more and more players while they're playing to go through the process of taking their license and see it from the coach's perspective, because I consider myself a player's coach, but man, it is a different job, and playing is a heck of a lot easier than coaching. I've learned that quickly. The hours are a lot different in a lot of ways as a player. You know, for lack of a better word, you're selfish. Yeah, you want the team to win every week, and you want nothing more than to lift the trophy for sure. But you train, you eat right, you lift your weights, but it's very me-driven. Whereas now as a coach, you're responsible for 30 kids, and they're kind of you see them as your own children, which sounds cheesy, I know, but it really is that way, because you want every one of them to have the best opportunity to succeed, the best opportunity to play. And they're from all different parts of the world, you know, and keeping them all together and on the same page. Some don't speak the language, and you're trying to guide them and give them the best opportunity. So it's a challenging job, and it's good for players to kind of see it from the coach's perspective, which is a hard thing. You know, it is a hard thing. I didn't see it that way as a player, but now that it's flipped, you learn a lot.
I know a kid from Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, that might be a good coach. Someday. Just throwing it out there. He sees the game in a special way.
He can scout for us anytime, man.
He may or may not be sitting over in the
room.
Yeah,
I know who you're referencing.
So you talk about the skills that you had to pick up, and you walk into the job, and, you know, I think about what it must have been like to be like, oh, hey, Jim, you're the head coach now.
Yeah.
What are the skills that you have had to pick up? Like, can you be specific for us? What are the things that you didn't have that you've had to learn or acquire?
Yeah, so the things I get criticized for being is too nice and also too honest with the media. And if those are the two things that I'm criticized for, I can live with that. You know, I'm okay with that. So I think you do have to find ways, though, to have harder conversations with players, which was difficult for me. I would say that I'm not confrontational. I mean, listen, I've been in a fight or two in my life for sure, but I'm not a confrontational guy in terms of I'm not combative with my players or anything like that. I'd rather have an open dialogue with them, find out what makes them tick, where they're feeling, what they're feeling about the season, how things are going. And I want them to feel like they can shoot me a text and call me. The game's evolved and changed a lot. I think back to ever shooting Bob Bradley a text. I don't know, that's something that would never, ever happen.
I think I've gotten a few texts, some emails. Usually,
yeah.
And I thought he was managing me, though.
And listen, Bob's the best.
Yeah,
but right. At the same time, he was intimidating when you're a young kid and a young player in the league, because you wanted to please him and do your best for him. So the game's changed in that regard, where I'm maybe more of an organic coach. I'll take things in. I'll listen to the players, and I'll try to adapt and adjust to them, and I do have open relationships with them, and, you know, we do joke a little bit, and they'll feel comfortable to send me a text. So that's something that I think I've improved on, that kind of, no, it wasn't good enough today, and given those hard talks is something that I've worked on through the years and gotten a little bit better at. You know, things like talking to the media is another one. You know, you have to try to navigate things, and especially early on, you know, you say some things that can be taken and maybe turned a different way, and you maybe misspeak
the media.
No. Well, you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
I'm not,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, so
headlines are a funny
you had to
thing.
Navigate you have to navigate things in a smart way. Obviously you want to be open and be authentic and be yourself, but maybe pulling some things back with something that I did, you know, from my earlier press conferences, even when I see them and myself talking, maybe
you're
a little
like,
too much.
Don't say that.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
Say that.
Exactly. Get yourself in trouble. So yeah, you learn through those things. So that would be maybe the two big ones for me would be the confrontations and getting a little better at how to handle them. And what I've learned is players respect, I'll use releasing a player for an example. They respect it more, to just say, we're letting you go, this is why, thanks for everything, good luck. They respect that a ton more than being drug along for a month or an extra, yeah, maybe come in and try out for this preseason. It's best to be upfront. I think that I've learned now through the years that being direct with them and is the best way, because they want to know exactly where they stand. They want to know when it's time to move on to a new opportunity. So that part is something that maybe I've improved on through the years.
Well, in honesty, next 10 minutes, we're going to have you come back and give us a blow-by-blow of every fight you've ever been in.
Oh, God.
So be ready for that.
Oh, gosh.
That's going to be a great
episode.
Well,
the old Chicago Fire locker room, I'll tell you what, man. There were some good ones. And that's why that was such a good team. Yeah, we practices during the week were a lot harder and a lot more physical, and the games became easy because there were some competitors on that team, yeah. And I saw firsthand as a young guy. We also played hard too on the off the field as well. We had some good nights, but yeah, that was a great group, a special group, and again, it's no coincidence that a lot of those guys are now having success. Yeah, man, I literally went from Jesse Marsh still tells the story. My first practice, I came into preseason and I had, you know, this curly blonde afro and showed up, and it was Risto Stoichkov and Peter Novak, and Bob Bradley throws me into the best possession game. So there was two groups. There was kind of the lower one. They threw me in with the top guys, and it was fast, man. It was fast. I was probably hungover from, you know, senior week or whatever it was at the time, and it was flying. And I kept up okay at the beginning, but fitness-wise couldn't keep up. And I fouled Peter Novak in one of the worst tackles just because I was tired and late, and I thought I broke his leg. And I remember walking off the field, and Jesse always tells this story that, you know, my line to him was, well, at least I can say I got to foul Peter Novak. And I thought my career was done as a player. From there, a lot of things have changed, and I've been very fortunate to be around those guys and kind of work my way through the ranks. And it's incredible to see the league grow. I think that everybody now is excited about MLS, and you know, it continues to become a league of choice for a lot of young players all over the world now, which is a really exciting time.
10 good minutes with Jim Curtin.
All right, guys.
Jim,
thanks,
stay honest.
Man.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Know what we've seen. Him that laughs now in some way shape the excess.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Peter Novak, he is a person I would not want to make angry in a training session. Just gonna say,
yeah, as a rookie, especially.
Yeah, it's questionable. Jim Curtin saw some red there. Look. The Fire, though, they made a deal. Shimasuav. Yes, that's the pronunciation. Frankowski. He's a right winger. Been playing in Poland for
that?
A while.
Did you come up with that?
I got the pronunciation Shimasuav. I think that's – I got this from a
that's not how you wrote
my source. How did I write it?
It looks like you wrote it Shimasuav.
I thought that's what I just said.
You said Shim.
Shim. I think the P is hard. That's what I've been told by someone who speaks Polish.
This is good.
Yes. Anyway, he's a 23-year-old from the Polish league. He's sort of broken in with the Polish national team. They think he's part of the next generation.
Doyle's really excited about this signing.
Yeah, it's a TAM deal.
Immediate
again,
water.
I'm just a little bit skeptical of it. But, no, give his vitals, okay?
He's 23.
Yep.
He hasn't scored a ton. He's apparently a north-south player. Speed. Not huge on the defensive side of the ball.
Two caps with the Poland national
Something
team?
Something like that. So if you have him and then you have Katai,
another winger,
those fullbacks are going to be
not much on the defensive
on an island.
Side
it's going to be like Survivor out there,
and Nikolic is your nine.
Yeah.
They're not.
But
Hope Dax McCarty's been really hitting the gym this offseason.
But in talking to Rodriguez, he said, we need speed. We need someone who stretches the field. I think he wants a team where, and I'm sure Pano's on the same line of, well, the right side cuts in and creates as like a pseudo 10, and the left side gives you width and gives you that speed that maybe Katai cuts in and can play through balls into that space for that left midfielder. Also, they don't have fullbacks, so I wouldn't worry about the fullbacks being on an island because they don't exist.
They're signing the homegrown kid, not Gutman, the other left back. Reynolds? It's not Brian Reynolds, your favorite player.
I'm never going to live that one down, am I?
Ever. No, but you're right. They don't have a lot of fullbacks, and they don't have a lot of it doesn't seem like they have much of a plan back there. This is it's interesting. Like you said, he has 4 goals, 5 assists in 31 games in the Polish league last year, a league that frankly is not as good as MLS. He was, I think, a little bit more productive the year before. He seems like he would be a fine player in this league. I'm going to be skeptical that he is a TAM player.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think I would be like, yeah, he's going to be a fine player in this league, and I would especially feel better about the Steel if I was Fire fans if I looked at the rest of the roster and I felt like he was that piece that took us over the top.
Yeah.
Like maybe if it was last year, before last season.
Oh, 100%.
Like,
if this was the replacement,
like, okay,
to fill right.
for the money Akam. We spent on right. David Akam, now we have a like for like. We were
with
successful
like Pulsar and Vincent
year.
Still in our
100%,
team.
100%. Yes.
And a piece at center back, yeah, and a goalkeeper.
They have a goalkeeper, apparently, or about to.
Right.
David Osted reportedly will be that player. I mean, DC United got to move him. So that could be good.
Homegrown signing in Gutjahr out of Indiana, who's a solid depth piece in central midfield, which is basically
just an eight, right?
Yeah, instead of drafting these guys and playing them, they can just now bring in one who's a homegrown.
The
couldn't Cam Lindley
defenders,
have done that too?
The defenders on their lineup on their roster right now: Grant Lillard, second year homegrown player, Nicolas Del Greco, the Argentine that they got from a Costa Rican team who like did not play.
Yeah, this isn't the Luciano Emilio era where he could come in and be the best player
in
the league.
Luciano,
oh my god, yeah. Jorge Corrales, who was a Cuban international and spent a lot of time down in USL and NASL, and I thought really struggled when he got on the field last year. And then Marcelo, a Brazilian center back who had been playing in the Portuguese league for one of the big
Sporting
three
Lisbon.
Yeah,
Sporting he wasn't really playing for
yeah,
them, though.
Yeah, he was. And like the knock on him was just he wasn't necessarily mobile enough.
Well, they also have a World Cup winner on the back line, too.
Yeah. Bastian Schweinsteiger says that maybe he likes playing center back a little bit more. This is a really weird roster right now. This is a really weird roster. They have all three DP slots spoken for in Schweinsteiger, Nikolic, and Katai is going to be a DP this year from what I understand. I'm not because they bought him. They bought out his contract last year. So last year, when he was on loan, he was just a TAM player.
Yep. Then he had a bunch of goals right before the end of the window.
Right.
Good timing, Mr. Katai. Marco Aranha is not going to sign either. Alojense, he's going back down to Costa Rica, which makes sense for him.
Yep.
Matt Polster is trying to get to Rangers. Steven Gerrard wants him. They're waiting on that UK work permit, but Sky Sports is hitting me up, want to know about Matt Polster. Nice. So, you know, you get that feeling. The Union made a signing. They brought in someone to teach the young Padawans about the press. Aurelien Collin has been signed as a free agent. Hey, man, he knows the press. He knows it like the back of his hand.
He was
Sporting
brutal
Kansas
last
City.
Year. He was brutal.
Red Bulls. He's not there to start. He's there to teach him how to chase balls.
He was rough last year on the Red Bulls.
I love Aurelien.
Like, I'm not one of those people who puts a lot of emphasis on what is your top end speed, because we've always had defenders in this league like Michael Parkhurst, who is not going to win many foot races, but has always been a spectacular MLS defender. That said, if you're going to press as high and as hard as Ernst Tanner seems to want to press, you need defenders like Aaron Long. Like Ike
Opara. He's not going to play, right? I mean, this is Trusty and McKenzie, period. This is just a just in case.
Well,
then let's stop talking about it.
Okay, all right, fine.
All right, fair enough. All right, if Aurelien Collin plays, we'll dissect that for you, Union fans. But as it stands, he's fourth at best on the depth chart.
We will have an incredible time doing so. In the meantime, I'm just going to watch replays of him going down the tunnel after getting a red card against Chivas and CCL. What a moment that was. Mateus Almeida, speaking of Chivas and CCL, he won that thing. Now he's got a rock star welcome in San Jose. That's as excited as anybody in San Jose has been about the Earthquakes in a long time. I saw those scenes, and my heart was absolutely warmed. Seeing him at Combine was a highlight. Watching him experience this league tactically, culturally, it's going to be so interesting. Same thing with Mark Dos Santos, who we think is one of the most interesting guys in this league. They got to build that roster.
And he has done it interestingly.
Yes, he has. We've got a lot of questions coming in. Derek Cornelius signed, young Canadian center back. I think he had like walked into Canada camp and became the captain by the end of it, which, you know,
it's a good sign.
Hard to know what it means, but that is a very good sign for sort of the rebuild of the culture that they're doing. They just announced the signing, 32-year-old Spanish midfielder John Aris with the use of TAM, which is a little shocking because Aris is 32, and he spent the vast majority of his career in Spain, mostly in La Liga 2.
Or in Cyprus or in Greece.
Correct.
Normally three leagues that bring powerhouse players to Major League Soccer.
TAM was a, I guess they have, you know, they have a lot of it based on the trades that they've made. So there's that. They've also been looked with Lucas Venuto, a Brazilian at Austria Vienna, who hasn't been super productive goal and assist-wise the last 2 years or so, but was like a close to 10-10, like an 8-8 player before that. He's 25. Las Bangura they've been linked to, and he says he's coming from Rayo in Spain, but he's another like La Liga 2 player who hasn't produced
a ton. I think 26 years old.
Yeah, doesn't really have the box score stats. You've got a South Korean central midfielder, Hwangin Bom, who played today, actually, in the Asian Cup. They won, moved on in the round of 16, 2-1.
Hasn't that rumor cooled off a little bit for the Caps? Yeah, because I think they might be competing with some heavier hitters.
That's the word. I think they're waiting to see what happens there. But he's 22, central midfielder. Jasser Kamiri is a Tunisian center back. He's 21. I think that one's in the same sort of place, which is, you know, can he move to Europe? If he can't, this may be the move that he makes. And then you have your favorite rumor here with the Caps. Dave?
I came
Sardar
in hot.
Sardar Azmoun, who plays for Rubin Kazan in Russia, 24-year-old Iranian, $9.5 million on transfer market, but feels like that may be
so he went to Rubin Kazan a year ago.
From Rostov,
and when Iran went through qualifying, I think they were the first team to qualify for the World Cup. I don't think they conceded a goal or they had the best defensive record the whole time. And then he was this young attacking player who was going to be like, you know, their superstar, Falcao, whatever it was. I heard all this talk about him, and it was a big deal that he was, like, playing at a good level at that age for an Iranian.
He scored a pretty good number of goals at Rostov.
Yeah.
Decent number. Good return.
And then he gets into the World Cup, and he was not good. He was immobile. His touch was off. His touch was long. I understand it's a high level. And then I think he retired right after the World Cup.
Oh, from Iran?
Yeah, I think that he said his mom was getting a lot of threats on social media because of his performances, and he was stressed out about it, and he thought it was inappropriate, and he didn't want to deal with it. So he announced his retirement. I don't know if he's at the Asian Cup right now, as Weeby furiously tries to look it up.
Yeah.
But I saw him play in person, was completely unimpressed by him after hearing a lot about him coming into it. And so the profile fits, right? Like, we're going to get a young guy who's from a national team where he could still stay in his national team if he doesn't go.
Upward trajectory, and then had a little hit to his stock. So maybe
doesn't
want
to live in Russia anymore.
Right.
Come here to Vancouver, blah, blah,
so
blah.
He retired after the World Cup, and then he went to camp with Team Melli in October of last year. Yes. And he's back, baby. He is back in the fold.
There you go. But, so completely unimpressed by him. If I hadn't seen him play, I would be very excited about this signing, except for the fact that I've seen him play.
Mm,
but in general, this window,
it's an interesting
one,
is
very
right?
Mark Dos Santos, right? Like,
is it?
I'm a Portuguese Canadian who lived in Mozambique, coached the youth coached youth in Brazil,
South Africa.
He's a well-traveled gent.
And so
I think
if you're someone like that who personally was overlooked because of the chaos that is soccer, and also was in all these places saying, there's talent here that no one's coming for, that no one's looking for. There could be a belief that there's just talent out there. You don't have to overpay, and you can find guys also that specifically fit your system, which is what he talked to us about, is there's 17 different types of defensive midfielders. So he's looking for specific attributes. That doesn't mean you have to overpay for it then and give him a TAM contract as a 32-year-old. I mean, I've seen Harrisburg City Islanders sign players, it feels like, of similar – R.I.P. Harrisburg. I was doing that for Bobby just realized he's on vacation.
Yeah, Bobby is not here. Bobby is not in the room.
All right, so I can use a different comparison.
What do you think are the chances that Bobby never comes back and he just ends up with like a second division team in Ecuador?
I think very low. Bobby seems like the type of person who would be like frustrated by the like concepts and tactics that were being used. That's that second division team.
Oh, see,
and not
I
be able
feel,
to keep his
I
mouth
feel
shut.
Like he like his world would expand.
Have you read his book?
Yeah. Bobby, to me, feels like the guy who gets on the bus to go meet up with that team and decides that he couldn't possibly live in a society in which people boarded a bus in that way and just, like, gets off and he's like, I'm out of here.
Have you ever read the story about the player from, I want to say, Rosario, who, like, people still argue is the greatest Argentine player ever, and he was, like, playing for a local club, and at like 19 was supposed to like go to another club and just got on the bus and was like, I don't want to leave, and like got back off the bus and just stayed in that city for the rest of his life. And people still debate, because you can't not prove it, that he was the greatest player.
It's like the Lloyd Daniels of, yeah.
And I think his like state played the national team once in a friendly, and he like destroyed the Argentine national team himself. And yeah, that's my Bobby story.
All right, cool. Kevin Gilmore took over the day-to-day operations at the Montreal Impact. That seems like boring front office news, but it's not. Joey Saputo's been running this thing for decades.
25 years.
Yeah. Decades.
I don't like
it's a I don't know how. Look, making this hire, making this announcement is one thing. Joey Saputo truly stepping back is another. It's his club. And it's in his heart.
Well, I'll just say we've talked, I think, a lot this year, not for the first time, but about coaching and how it can change teams, and how I think someone used the term DP coaches, right, with Matias Almeida and stuff. But front office talent in this league is so huge because resources are so small. And I think we can all say from operating in this league and meeting people, there are some teams that it feels like are run as professional organizations, whether sports teams or not. And there are other teams that feel like at times they're operated on the back of a napkin.
It's a little more chaotic, yeah, at times.
So having the correct front office staff is important, and it's the type of thing where only the fans in their market really see it that much. Like, we don't see it that
and
much.
The marketing and the way that the season ticket holders are dealt
with. The language
with
of the club,
to,
exactly.
Yeah, for sure. And those things matter. Those are the things that help elevate a club like Kansas City or Columbus.
It's why we're so excited for Columbus Crew.
Yes,
or Columbus,
for sure.
The Columbus
for sure.
Crew, whatever I'm supposed
right
to say.
Before we go to break, Luchi Gonzalez in there, then the mailbag on the other side, 401-206-0-MLS. Anybody have a favorite transfer window rumor going around right now? Because mine is definitely Rodolfo Zelaya to LAFC. Let me get a little bit of that. Been banging in 20-plus for Alianza forever. El Salvadorian legend. Should have been in the league like 5 years ago.
Is he the one who was part of the match fixing?
Yeah.
Wasn't he in MLS already?
No, I don't think so. I think
he went to like Russia,
yeah,
or Hungary or something.
I think he didn't he kill it with Sacramento there for a while, or maybe I'm off with that one.
Well,
I don't know. Now you can look up Rodolfo's nice. Other rumors that I like, Portugal interested in Chris Durkin, Ezequiel Ponce to maybe to the Timbers. They're looking for a young DP, looking to spend around $5 million, reportedly.
If they spend $5 million, I mean, the last time they opened the checkbook up like that,
well, wasn't it Blanco?
I don't think Blanco was that much. I thought Milano was more than Blanco.
He might have been, but I think Blanco was in the same region.
Okay, all right.
That
well,
it worked out.
Well, I mean, they're batting 500.
Hey, ain't too bad. Also enjoying the Matt Miazga story out there with his manager or former manager in France.
Definitely not enjoying that.
Slamming him.
You know what does frustrate me? If Pulisic was on Chelsea, he would be playing right now.
Yeah.
It's, like, really frustrating when you watch Chelsea play, especially with Hazard playing false nine. There are minutes there for him that he's not getting at Dortmund. And I don't know.
Pulisic, he had that 15-minute cameo this weekend. He was really good.
Oh, yeah? Against Leipzig?
Yeah, he was really good. I mean, not as good as McKennie. McKennie was awesome
the
second half of that game. John Brooks was not. I'm past the, like, we got to start worrying about John Brooks' ability to defend. Anyway, we're going far afield.
Zelaya
right now
played in Russia, never played in MLS. There was probably rumors out of that Gold Cup, and then the match fixing thing happened.
Bummer.
That was the game, by the way, when Donovan put on the sunglasses. That was against El Salvador in that Gold Cup.
That was in Baltimore, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I was at that game too.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh.
When he got the beer thrown at him.
The El Salvadorian fans, the Salvadorans. If you want to watch a soccer match with people who make it a party, they are some good supporters to hang out with. Roma, El Salvador at Red Bull Arena back in the day. A little bit of papaya on the way in. What a great, great environment that was. All right, we got to get out of here. Luchi Gonzalez in the break, and on the other side, the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Ten minutes with FC Dallas head coach Luchi Gonzalez starts right now. Coach, what's up? How's it going?
Morning.
Yeah.
Pleasure to be here.
Uh-huh. We're doing one topic with everybody, and your topic, I think, is pretty obvious for those who have paid attention to FC Dallas in your past. It's how to transition academy players to the first team, how to develop academy players who can do that. So when you think about that massive, massive job, this topic has so many different kind of spokes on it. Where would you start as a coach?
It's the pathway. So I think where I have been experiencing in MLS without a second team, that jump is very difficult, and it's rare. We've had the pleasure to have leadership that integrates and encourages young players training side by side with the first team. We have a school program in our academy that allows a schedule for academy players to train at the same time as our professional players. So there's always been a lot of movement and shifting. Whether a player is just a spar player in training or he's literally in the 11 versus 11 exercise, there's always player movement and integration with the first team. So that's been special, and that's allowed us to have successful cases of players coming through and signing players that we feel can make an impact at the highest level in the club. That jump is still really, really big. Training is different than debuting in our stadium, let alone playing in Seattle in their environment and being successful. So the addition of the second team will be new for us and highly exciting for us, because we know that's going to close that gap, not just in the training environment, but physically, mentally, technically, tactically, in terms of their maturation, and allowing them to compete in professional games at 16, at 17, at 18. They've compiled 30, 40 professional games against men in a competitive league, so that we are more convinced they're ready to impact our first team. So we're learning just like everybody else in our own pathway. I don't look at us as this success story. No, what success? We can do so much more. We can do so much better. So I think we've taken some nice steps. We have a ownership that really believes in youth development and homegrown players in terms of players and staff. And they show that with their actions. And now the second team's going to allow us to take our next step.
With these young uber-talented players, the ones you're expecting, is the point of what you want to do to ease them in and make it easy, or are you trying to challenge them and make it hard?
Make it hard. Make it as uncomfortable as possible, but doing it in a supportive, constructive way. So we want our players out of their comfort zone. Sometimes a player playing U19, he could be 18 years old. Unfortunately, playing games or training with the U19s does not get him out of their comfort zone. But playing against a 23-year-old man that wants to play in MLS, in the USL Pro, that's going to get that player out of their comfort zone. From game speed, from the physicality, from the psychological part, maybe with an environment, hopefully, you know, in some of the away games in the USL Pro. So absolutely getting them out of their comfort zone so that they can respond to it. If the rope is held low, some players will jump way over the rope, some players will just step over the rope. But if we want to hold the rope as high as possible, and so that they have to jump over that rope, and if some of them trip and fall, they're going to have to get up and try again until they do it. So that's the idea.
You have different responsibilities now than you did as the academy director.
Absolutely.
It's a big change for you,
yeah.
Yet within the same environment. How does your mindset shift? How does your job change? How does what you do this year change?
So the beauty in our club is I'm a member of a group with a uniform idea. So absolutely my individual role shifts and changes in terms of priorities. I can't meet with the U12 player and parent about certain things, although I will be available when I have to be, and I'll do what I need to do because I think that's important for a professional coach to do sometimes with a young family or a young player. But the group's goals are the same, are very in line. In the academy, our goal from the academy is to win an MLS Cup. That's our goal in the academy, or we're part of that goal. And what can we do to serve that? And is it producing players? Well, we want to not just produce players to win the MLS Cup. We want to produce players to monetize the academy, monetize the first team, so that we can buy players that can win MLS Cup if we don't currently have them. So we're learning that. But our goals are the same now. Yes, my individual role obviously is clearly different. In answering that question directly, the game to me has fundamentals, has building blocks. So I'm big on the game, and I believe in myself and the staff with our first team, that we're going to help our professional players keep developing in terms of the game and how we train and our training methodology and our game model and the way we want to play with and without the ball and what we're going to show on Saturday or Sunday or Wednesday night, and doing it in a way that allows our players to enjoy the game, to control the game as much as possible, and ultimately to win. And doing it in a way that our fans can be proud of what they're doing in that jersey.
One of the things you talk about, player development and coaching, and you need talent, right? You need the raw materials. You guys have done a good job both scouting but also recruiting those players. You mentioned meeting with U12 kids. What's been the secret for FC Dallas? You don't have to give everything away of finding good players and getting them in your program.
Trying to put that in the most concise way possible. We're lucky that there is talent in Dallas from a youth standpoint. It's a competitive youth soccer structure. There's promotion relegation, U10, U11, U12s. So we're picking up kids young in these very competitive leagues that have all different styles of play, that have talent, that are competitive, that have parents that are competitive, and we're able to filter that into our younger teams in the academy that can compete immediately. But we want them to learn the game better and respect the game better. So that's important in our teaching, and that's important in what our coaches are doing down there. And then maintaining that foundation so well that a Chris Richards can come in at U17, U18, and not be in our system, that he immediately soaks it in. It influences him. He's now integrated into our culture, and he can take the next step, whether it's youth national team, signing a contract, playing with us, playing with Byron, having his career so well that a Jesus Ferreira can come through at 9, 10, 11, 12 and maintain being in our system, in our pathway, and find his way into our first team. And I think he's going to have a great future because he has a great mentality, not just his pedigree. He himself has the tools to be successful in the league if he earns it Monday through Friday. But we want to have this culture and this foundation in our academy, whether a player is there from the beginning or added late, that it completely influences them to get to their potential, their high potential. And we're lucky that we have owners that invest in an amazing facility with fields, that hire smart, patient, and good people in terms of our coaching and our staff and togetherness. And they're not just trying to work their way up the ladder and make a bigger paycheck. They're literally, their priority is to be the best they can in their role for the player. And that mentality, that culture, it's protected. But it's also, it's open. It's open. We want to learn about others. We want others to visit us so we can learn about them. But it's protected in terms of the priority, the objectives. And how that transfers to the first team, that's something that we're learning as we speak.
I want to know those young players that you think have a chance to make an impact. Before we get there, though, I want to pick out a word you said, and it's monetized to help that first team. And Chris Richards fits right into that mold. Just sold to Bayern Munich, per reports, but seems to be done. That's a big move for him. That's a big move for your club, both from a financial perspective as well as kind of a pedigree perspective. How do you balance this idea of being a potentially selling club, but also an ambitious club that wants to go win MLS Cup? That is the goal.
It's a great question, and the best I can answer it is this is a young league. Still, it will be the greatest league in the world. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. It's a league that today, I don't know if you can look at the Big Five in Europe and compare it to that model where Barcelona is well, as good as the Masia is. The academy's plan B in Barcelona. They're going to buy the top talent and the top players to win everything. And the same for Real Madrid, the same for Bayern Munich, the same for any team in the Big Five, Man City, et cetera. I like looking at the Dutch League, the Portuguese League, the Belgium League, where those are development, the Croatian League. Those are development clubs. Those are selling clubs. Those are clubs that win the league, that compete in Europe, but those are selling clubs. They sell their top talent to monetize their academy, to monetize their first team. And I think that's something that not just FC Dallas, a lot of us in the league can respect and envy and model and learn from, because I don't think there's a clear model in MLS today to win an MLS Cup, to win the Supporter Shield. There are, I mean, what Atlanta did was amazing, was beautiful. And I salute them, and watching them hurt, but that's great. But I think another model can win the next year. I think we're not there yet where it's a clear, clear model winning year in, year out. So that's for what I know, and that's what I see. We need to be prepared for the future, and I think the future is us trying to monetize our first team spending, our academy. Hey, Davies money with Vancouver, I mean, that's amazing. That's huge. That's a big success for not just Vancouver, the league, all of us, because now it's creating a market for our players in the U.S. and in Canada. And are we all going to get Davies money for our top? No. But we can certainly take steps in that direction and learn from it and then find the next. Can we find the next? In our club, our goal was, our biggest transfers were Richard Sanchez. You know, it was Alex Endejas, $500,000, a million. Chris Richards, 1.25, 1.5. By the way, I haven't been confirmed that from the club. So if that happens,
this is coming out, from my perspective,
if that happens from my perspective, those are steps in the right direction. If we go from 1 to 17, I think we're as high as that jump is, you can also fall. You know, you have to take these little steps, and I think the league is ready to take those little steps. Let's keep creating value, all of us in the league, of our players, so that we can ultimately spend money that we've earned, and not just coming out of the owner's pocket.
What young players are you excited about for this year? Homegrowns, otherwise? Who do you think has a chance to make an impact, as you said, if they earn it?
So I look at this roster, and I'm coming in. There's different ages. There's big discrepancies in salaries, so where our league is, and experiences. And I want to take all that, I want to throw it to the side. I want to look at them as human beings. They're not just not their talent. I think talent is overrated. They have to have talent to be in this roster. Look at their human being qualities. Look at their technical, tactical, decision-making qualities. Look at their lifestyle, and not judge early. I'm gonna the 17-year-old. I'm gonna look at the same way as the 28-year-old veteran in the league that's played a World Cup, and I want to have them all integrate and embrace their differences and give them all the opportunity to be successful. We are a club that's on the younger side. I know a lot of the younger players personally. Absolutely, that's a great strength, but that could also be a weakness if it's not managed well. So I have to make sure that whether the veteran player that I've never coached before, it's the young player in the academy that we won a national championship here in the USSDA. I need to know them all well and treat them fairly and have them compete with each other and treat each other as teammates fairly. And when one player is on the field, the other player not on the field is going to get their back and want the best for them, because they know it's the best for the club, for the unit. The team is the star. The club is the star. And that culture is something that it's not exactly what you say. It's what you do and how you act. And I'm excited to get that process started with the staff.
10 minutes with Luigi Gonzalez, head coach of FC Dallas. Coach, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I don't even know how I feel lately. I don't even know what's real lately. I don't even know how I feel lately. Feel lately. Something deep down.
Back on Extratime Radio, driven by Continental, into the mailbag, 401-2060-MLS, extratime at mlssoccer.com. That's how you get at us. I'm so happy to be back. I feel like I've like missed a good month and a half.
You have good energy here.
Yeah, I feel like it.
You had a good woo.
I'm practicing for 2019. I'm practicing active listening, trying to be a better listener. And I realized a couple segments ago now, I stepped on your information about Matias Fernandez to FC Cincinnati.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, you know what? Cincinnati dodged a bullet by the fact that
that's
this
where
deal
I feel.
Didn't
that's
get
where
done.
That's where I'm living right now.
Yeah, I was like, oh, they are fortunate. Now they can, you know, look. First half of the season, be defensively sound. Hope you can get some goals from the Lamas and Adis of the world, maybe Darren Maddox pops up, and in the summer you have a better window to go shopping, you have a better idea of what kind of player that you need. But I'm told that they still really like him. It's not that they didn't like him, just some of the terms of the deal didn't work out. It was dead. It may still be dead.
So it's not that he didn't pass a physical.
No.
That's what we were all told.
Everything that I was told was that that was not the issue, that there were some financial issues and that they were going to try to revisit it if they could. And if they couldn't, okay. But if they could, they were still interested. So we shall see. We shall see. By the way, Bill Hamid said something that I can identify with at Media Marketing. He said, I saw the four they called in. I'm just going to keep it real with you. I feel like I'm better than all four of them. Good. There's just three others on Extra Time, but if you include Ben Bear, I feel a lot like Bill Hamid. I just want to say it. I want to put it out there. I feel like I'm better than all of you.
I'm definitely Zach Steffen.
Wow.
They're just pumping caps at me so I could get my, my UK work permit.
Who would be? Let's see. I don't know. Alex Bono, Sean Johnson, and Tyler Miller. I'm not sure there's any good matches.
All right. I'm Gigi Buffon. The hell out of here.
Ben Bear's definitely.
So you're done? You're washed? It's over?
Ben Bear's definitely Alex Bono, and Bobby Warshaw's definitely Sean Johnson.
Okay. Do we think Bill Hamid's better than all of them? I mean, not
no,
Steffen,
I don't.
Right?
I don't, and I also, I've never, like, bowed at the altar of Bill Hamid. If Ben was in here, he would, like, fly off his seat and put me through a wall right now, because Ben has unapologetically told you that Bill Hamid's the best goalkeeper in the pool for, like, 5 years now.
All right. So these four guys are in this camp because they're all good with their feet. And to varying degrees.
Which, by the way, applause to Sean Johnson for getting into that experience.
Yeah, and look, mistakes happen. Every keeper, no matter how good they are, everybody who tries to play like that has those mistakes. Sean Johnson's definitely had a couple of them, but he has gotten to the point where he's good with his feet. So is Bono, so is Zach Steffen, so is Tyler Miller. I'm convinced that's why it's those four. What Bill Hamid is, I think, better than anybody in the pool at is coming off his line, getting big, cutting down the angle, and then staying big. He is ridiculously brave on those shots, but he has to get better with his feet and he has to get better at stopping shots from distance,
which that's my issue. If you said he's not good with his feet but he's impenetrable as a shot stopper, I could see you saying okay, fine, but he's not. He makes mistakes and there's holes in his game, and that's my issue. No. With Hamid is he can't play with his feet, but he's the best shot stopper in the pool, then he's in the conversation, he should be in camps. But if he's not either of those.
Well, he's that 90% of the time. It's the 10% that
But I'm not going to put that in my national.
I agree.
Team.
That's the 10% that's sometimes
but
the
issue. But I don't think the door is closed on Bill Hamid.
Agreed.
No, 100%.
And I actually don't think it's closed on Melia or Stephen Fry yet either. If both those guys have another MLS goalkeeper of the year type performance, and I know they're both into their early mid 30s now, it wouldn't shock me to see either of those guys or Brad Guzan over the next year or two.
I think Guzan's getting back into this thing. It's just a matter of January camp being a different thing, giving him a break after MLS Cup. Yeah. There's no way you can walk away from Guzan at this point. But
we said before MLS Cup, like, you know, one of these two keepers is going to have to make an amazing save to keep them in the game. Brad Guzan made that save.
Give us the mail. What do we got?
Luke from Milwaukee here. After the Lee Wynn situation, people were saying Friedel made his stamp on the team and was establishing the culture he expects. Doesn't the Diego Fagundes situation, specifically that he's publicly vying for a transfer, prove it didn't work? I don't follow New England closely, but it just feels like Friedel's culture-building methods are antiquated.
I'm not in there. I can't answer that part. Yeah, so I can't. Like, I don't even want to speculate on that aspect of it. I still look at what they're doing, and like Justin Renix, that's a huge victory for them and one that's been up and down. To get him to sign a homegrown deal after what went down with him trying to go on trial and not, and he's been good at Indiana, that's a good start. You know, they got Edgar Castillo. I think that's a decent move. Moving Kellen Rowe, hit or miss there.
I mean, but you listen to what Kellen Rowe said when he left. He said, it was never bad blood between me and Brad Friedel. There wasn't a lot of communication, but it wasn't one of those things where it was two people who couldn't even stand to, like, it didn't work out for Kellen Rowe under Brad Friedel. No, that's different than Lee Wynn. Obviously, there was some level of bad blood there. It sounds like maybe it's going in that direction with Diego Fagundes as well. We're not in there. We don't know what the culture is like. But when you have that many talented players, frankly, wanting to leave, it's a warning flag. And when you have guys who they spent a lot of money on, whether it's like a Claude Dielna or Gabriel Somi or Wilfred Zahibo, these are guys that they spent a lot of money on who aren't in the first team plans, That's a red flag.
There's
as
other
well.
Big questions there. Michael Mancien, will he be good enough to live up to the very sizable chunk of change
league's
that he's
highest,
making?
Which, league's highest paid center back.
Yes, which says defender in that case, which says this guy should be a difference maker. He should not alone fix our back line, but it should go a long way in getting there. Juan Fernando Caicedo is the new center forward. They signed him out of, I think, Medellin in Colombia. Yep. He's a double-digit scorer, but in like 40 games, so that's a question mark. Juan Agudelo, they re-signed. Love Juan. We've always loved Juan. The talent is there. You can just kind of feel it all the time. Like, he's going to do it. He's going to break through. But the last time I really felt that, I feel like, was maybe 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. All the talent in the world, TBD, Diego Fagundes now wants to leave. He was probably your best attacking player outside of Pinilla last year.
Yep.
And then the back line still has issues. So, I mean, there are a lot of there's a lot of questions. Sounds like they want to spend some money, though, so maybe Bojan's coming in to fix it all. Maybe he's the replacement for Fagundes. We shall see.
Next one up, Johnny from the Six. Came up with an ETR drinking game. Hope you like it. Drink when, Bobby says, what do we actually think about this? When, just after correcting someone's grammar, Doyle destroys the pronunciation of Toronto. Anyone starts talking about Middle Eastern food. Bobby mentions that he coaches, which I didn't realize he mentioned that much, so that gets me pumped. When Ben Bear makes a guarantee that literally everyone already knows is going to happen. If you do this, listeners will be sloshed within 20 minutes.
Yeah, 21 plus. You guys feel free to play that game if you would like.
18 plus if you're with Johnny and the Six in Canada.
There you go.
And you can go to, what do they call them where you're allowed to buy beer?
I don't know.
Okay,
man.
It's fine. Nathan W., how fierce would a BWP Altidore frontline be? Even with Altidore's injuries, I'd love to see that arms race with Atlanta. Any team should be happy to have him. Where do you think Altidore fits best? So let's start here. Josie Altidore gave a quote to Hercules Gomez and Max Bredos at Media Marketing.
Jeff Carlisle basically passed it on. Basically, I mean, this sounds like it's over. He's like, it's been a terrific time, but at the end of the day, it's a business. When I say it's bittersweet, it's because I spent 4 years there. I put roots down. My family enjoys it. It's bittersweet in the sense that you have to leave that and go on to something new, but that's the business. I'm excited for what's to come.
So start here. Do you think there's any chance he plays for a different MLS team besides Toronto FC on his next contract?
Yes.
You do?
I do. I don't think it's a great chance, but it's definitely a chance. I also think that there's a chance that he stays with Toronto. But it's tough because he's making, what, $4.5 million a year? And
I think it might even be more than that.
Yeah,
I think it might be like 5.5.
Largely been worth it in terms of Toronto before Chivinko, Josie, and Bradley was a joke. They had to spend their way out of that. They've done that. They don't have to spend their way out of it next time. Josie Altidore, at 30, 31 years old, given his injury history, is probably not a DP player. He's probably a TAM player. And if they could get him back.
See, I don't know about that. There's definitely somebody in the league that's going to give him DP.
Oh, 100%.
1,000% somebody will.
Yeah.
I think it'd be worth it. You look at some of the other DPs out there.
If you look at his scoring rate, Josie Altidore is a monster in the playoffs. What he did in 2017 is the single greatest playoff performance we have ever had in this league. But he's going to be in his 30s, and he's never been a guy who's been able to string together back-to-back healthy seasons. I think it would be crazy to bring him back at a DP number.
Okay, look, a Joseph Martinez 5-year deal, that's crazy, for sure. But if you're talking about, say, a 2-year deal with club options in the next two, that's not as crazy. A 2-year commitment for a club that needs a 9 to get the instant marketing ability, to get the instant name recognition
and
power that you would have with Josie in your market.
And if
he sticks with the U.S., all of a sudden, his profile remains high.
And if you get lucky and he starts 20 games, which isn't all luck, right? We know that Toronto FC did good things in terms of their sports science to keep him healthy. He scores 12 to 14 goals probably for you, which is something that a lot of teams in MLS spend poorly on and don't get.
Look, 13 games played in 2018. He has not played more than 25 for Toronto FC. I guess he played 27 in 2017, plus CCL.
Right.
15, 10, 13 goals. I mean, if he's on the field, he's going to score. It's just, I mean, that is a big question mark. But I think somebody in this league would give him a DP deal.
Where would you want to see him? Where it makes sense, where they'd have an opening, where he would go.
Look, I think he would go to Miami, but I don't know if that necessarily makes sense because I think they're going to go after a different kind of player. But you look at him, he's a South Florida guy from way back. Like, who wouldn't want to do that?
Would there be a chance, because we've talked about it with Michael a lot, that Bob Bradley takes him in?
Well, if they get Rodolfo Zelaya, I'm not sure that there's going to be room for two guys with that level of goal scoring in the building. I mean, Red Bulls would be interesting.
Yeah.
I think that would be very interesting.
Man, if you look at Josie's numbers across all competitions last year, he had 7 goals in 13 games in MLS. He had 3 goals in 3 games in Canadian Championship. He had 3 goals in 8 games, 627 minutes in the CONCACAF Champions League. So even in a year in which he was injured a lot, he still had 13 goals and like 6 assists.
Yeah.
Somebody would do it. Somebody would definitely do it. He will be, if he wants to stay in this league as a DP at the end of this, he will be able to. Now the question, well, could Toronto, if they made him, they'd have to make him an offer to hold on to his rights, yeah? Mm-hmm. So, look, this is an interesting one. This feels to me like negotiating between the two of them right now.
I don't think he's gone yet.
I agree.
And if I was Toronto FC, I wouldn't be quick to move on him, because I would keep him, because you're going to lose Giovinco. I would keep him. I think you're going to –
Are
think
you going to lose Giovinco?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to be willing to offer him the number that he wants. I think he
Who
can,
is, though?
I think that there is, in the world of soccer, and I say that, Middle East, China, Southeast Asia, wherever you're talking about, whatever crazy deal,
maybe
Japan.
Maybe even in Mexico if it's on a free.
Yeah. And so I think you bring back Josie. You sign someone who's younger, but not at the quality of Giovinco, because they're not going to spend that number anymore. And I think you bring – I think Bradley's probably reasonable at a smaller number, because I think he wants to be there. I know that it's gone back and forth over the last year.
They love him in Toronto.
And I think
they love him.
I think
he loves it there.
I think he sees the future. Bob being in the league changes that a little, because there's a chance that if he's going to go for a lower number, he's going to be like, well, why don't I just go to L.A. and play for my dad and – all of that to close out his career.
But again, Marc-Anthony Kay
for sure
holding that spot down.
Rodolfo Zelaya as well. Gabe Schenker here. Recently, I started following pro soccer more closely and listening to ETR and other podcasts. Great idea. To try to learn more about the tactics of the game. But what I'm hearing keeps sounding like tactical binary. A team is either A, possession-based and builds out of the back, or B, sits back, concedes possession, maybe with a high press like Red Bulls, and tries to play direct or hit on the counter. Can you talk a little about how different teams craft their own styles and strategies within this binary, and or about any options that exist outside of
it? It's not really a binary. It's three. Trinary?
Yeah.
Is that a word? but it's possession versus counterattack versus pressing. There are basically three schools of how to play the game. Possession is, you know, as he said, build out of the back. Now, there are ways to do it. Columbus, for example, dropped Will Trapp deep between the center backs. The center backs would split. The full backs would push up. You would build possession around the ability of Trapp and Artur, the other central midfielder, to switch where possession was being held. You it's called a pressure trap, right? You bring, by possessing the ball on the right side, you try to get the opposition to send one more defensive player over to that side, and once they've done that, you spring the pressure trap and you hit a long switch to the other side, and that's where you attack. And the perfect example of it is the goal they scored against the Red Bulls in the playoffs. Like, you could see Alex Mouil is the pressure trap. Once he crosses midfield and comes over, he's a right winger, comes over to the left side to put pressure on the ball, they're like, boom, left side's open, and Artur hits that big long, like, that's how Columbus did it. And I think Sporting Kansas City, another high possession team, was similar. NYCFC, another high possession team, weren't as focused on that particular side. They were actually focused on building directly from the center backs to the full backs and then interplay along one sideline or another. But generally speaking, yeah, possession teams build from the back with the idea of bringing the opponent upfield and then eliminating players with the ball.
On Thursday, we'll be back with Matt Doyle's part two of this conversation.
Sorry.
No,
sorry.
I think it's great.
Scratched an itch right there.
Yeah, the moment I read this, I was like, how much time can I get
Bobby's
to
Bobby's
going to
be furious that he missed this one. He's going to come back.
There's only one correct way of playing soccer, so this trinary stuff is absolute BS. Possession.
He's also going to mention the team he coaches. I don't know if you've heard of
it. It's the only brave way to play.
Felipe here from Tulsa. Yesterday, I watched River Plate versus Defensa y Justicia game. I noticed that ex-Dynamo player Lionel Miranda.
Oh my God! This
was playing, and he was
best. Hit the other end with all the pronunciations here.
Yeah, he was the best player on the field by far. He was megging people, controlling play, being dynamic. However, he didn't get on the field in MLS because of Owen Coyle.
Correct.
What are some other good players that never quite got their shot in MLS because of bad management or a bad front office? This is a delicious question.
Who's the Chilean that continued to be a force for the national team, like years after DC just buried him and never played him? I'm like blanking on the name right now.
So am I.
Yeah, I'll find it at some point. So whoever the DC fans listening will immediately know.
Miranda is the best current example of that. The forward who was for the Revs, they signed him as a
I won this one the other day.
Milton
Caraglio. Yeah, Milton Caraglio.
Caraglio's never been a great player, but he's been a lot better in Liga MX than he.
Who's the
Rafael Baca goes under.
Rafael Baca, totally underappreciated by the Quakes front office.
Who's the Ecuadorian
Mina? But his was
Miller Bolanos.
But his was different because Chivas USA fell apart, right?
Yeah.
Like, he played for Chivas USA, and then they were no longer a team.
Yeah, but Chivas
USA
didn't appreciate him.
Potentially.
They didn't love him like everyone else did.
Anyone else who has any good ones out there?
Oh, we would love this. This is delicious.
There are a couple. I wish I had been given preparation time for this.
This was the only one I was going to prep you for, but I was like, let's see how good Doyle is on his feet. And he was not very good. So now I know how to manage him.
Honestly, as you get older, you dump RAM. Like, I have way less rant. Like, 5 years ago, I would have crushed that question right now.
Also, 5 years ago, there was, like, seven less MLS teams, and you had five years of MLS.
Seven fewer.
5 years ago, we should have signed Rodolfo Zelaya, but, you know, Fito will come when he comes.
No, literally 5 years ago is when he was banned for a
year. Well, should have done it before. Then he wouldn't have done it.
Last one here. Antonio from L.A., listening to Monday's pod, Bobby mentioned the likelihood that Atlanta were going to play Barco to raise his stock going into the U20 World Cup, which got me thinking who's more likely to get a call-up to the senior national team for Argentina, PT or Barco. Do either of them have a chance to get a look at Copa America this year? Could they lose PT and Joseph for a full month together?
PT had just kind of pushed in a little bit, hadn't he?
Yeah.
Look, he's best player in their league if he comes and he kills it.
He's the best player in Comebol.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I don't see why he couldn't. I think Barco's maybe a little bit of a less shot just because they'll be prepping him for the U20s. That would be his focus, and he just got hurt, and he's not playing. That would also be a red flag issue. But it's not just Barco that we're looking at for the U20s. I mean, you're hearing a lot of chatter right now. Mark McKenzie maybe being pulled out and left out a little bit. Atlanta United, according to Paul Tenorio, haven't been the best about U20 call-ups.
Apparently Marcos Lopez has played really well for Peru.
Yep. He's pushed into the first team as well.
Yep. Last one here. Hi, Dave, Bobby, Matt, and Andrew. This one's for Bobby, so I'm reading it now while he's away. We'll never tell him about it again. Hashtag Team Bobby. Bobby made my day today on the way to work. On Friday, I head to the gym at 5:30 a.m., barely alive like a zombie. I was listening to the last ETR on the way, and Bobby was saying how he can no longer elbow people in his post-soccer world to get out his frustrations. Then Bobby drops this line to Matt. Quote, how many people that like you do you think like you because you pander to them? I couldn't stop laughing so hard. I played the clip over and over. I don't know if that would have been a yellow or red card. I love listening to Bobby and Matt debate soccer tactics. It's up my love for the game.
I don't know what I'm just glad that Bobby did not elbow me or
so
go
you missed
my
this,
ankles.
But in the mailbag, I brought up a question to purposely stoke the flames.
Yeah.
And Bobby's response was, and Doyle was trolling him throughout this segment.
I was not. I never troll.
Yeah, for sure. And
I don't pander.
And then Bobby goes, what's so hard about my life now is when people used to frustrate me, I would just two-foot them in training, and now I don't know what to do with people.
Yeah, exactly. I see Bobby all the time in this office. We get in yelling.
We've really been in
yelling fights, and I see him looking at me, and I know what he wants to do. And I'm just like, Bobby, professional environment, remember.
It's like having a child in the office. It really. He's like a 16-year-old.
You love him? But he baffles you at all times.
Yeah.
He makes all the decision-making
and his
process.
Energy, and he still can't differentiate between his own good energy and bad energy. Like, he doesn't have the internal resources to moderate that.
Very,
you know?
Very Stanford way of saying that. Yeah, he doesn't have the internal resources. We're going to circle back with Bobby, do this offline. He's in Ecuador, by the way. Thanks for listening.
No,
Lucha
not
Gonzalez.
Yet. I got one more also from that show, from Landon Cotham, who got into my DMs.
Which are
last
not
week.
A safe space.
Not a safe space.
Throw that
so,
out to you.
Yeah, there you go, space. Landon. Landon is an Austin fan. He says, I'm part of the organizational team for Austin Anthem, which is one of the fan groups down there. Part of the mailbag last week was Bobby and I kind of annihilating the song.
Songbooks.
Well, but really, it was Bobby annihilating the songbook for them.
Pandering while Bobby.
I'm not a gatekeeper, but I did.
This was what happened.
I was under the mistaken impression that maybe the front office had something to
slipped
do.
In a little song about city council. Right. Pizza. Yeah.
Well, Landon Cotham assures me that's not the case. I can guarantee you 100% that we came up with each of the chants on our own. El Tree also came out of the group. I have Slack messages, photos, and videos from meetings and practice sessions for the drum section, which is clutch because a good drum section, that everybody knows, is the heartbeat of a good supporters group. I was also the person playing the snare drum in the drum section. We, Austin Anthem, definitely coordinated with the front office to be part of the event, but we were 100% in charge of our content. I don't mind if people hate the chants. Pandering to Bobby right there, but I do want them to be I do want them to be properly represented. I really enjoy your work. Thanks.
Yeah. Again, there's the end there. Oh, it goes back to.
Well,
the,
no, I mean,
I really enjoy. He really perked up when he started
fan.
Speaking.
He's a fan.
Yeah.
He's a fan.
He's a fan, and my fans should be properly represented. Landon, you have my apologies. I can't speak for Bobby. I'm assuming he wouldn't apologize because he's just like that. But
you
got
really
a fan right here. You got a fan right here in Matt Doyle.
I think that supporter gatekeeping is weak. And that you should just. Control your own environment, and if you want a certain thing, be a supporter and go make it. I think it's fair to sit back and like be a, you know, armchair analyst, let's call it, and like judge other people, but nobody has to listen to you, and that's a dumb opinion that doesn't matter.
To be fair, I was really only judging Bobby right
yeah,
here.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Whereas Bobby was judging the good people at Austin Anthem.
Can I throw a mailbag question in from David in Brooklyn?
Yeah. Oh, you're in Brooklyn now. I like it.
Yeah. Unfortunately. That because Landon came up. If Josie Altidore were to move MLS clubs next offseason.
You're putting him in Austin.
Would it be the biggest move of an MLS player between two MLS teams since Landon Donovan?
Ooh. Well, David Akam, 2018 MVP. David Akam going, I mean, that was huge. That was the key to these. Sorry. Sorry.
Bobby's never going to go on vacation.
He's
again
like listening
after
to this one somewhere
this.
In South America, just like two footing the like poor bellhop next to him. I don't know. I think that'd
I'll
probably
have to
be
think
up there.
About that a little bit.
All right,
we'll be back on Thursday.
401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're out of here. We'll see you later, everybody.